Hi, Internet. My name is Jonathan Matos.
You can hear within the whole hesitation there. And this is Melissa Matos.
Welcome to Unboxing Story, where we unpack fiction without the friction. Today's episode, we're talking about generic genre stuff. And as a case study.
What are they called? Vanilla fantasy.
Yeah.
What we are studying today.
Yeah, because I mean, there probably will be something else generic in another genre that we can talk about.
When we get to the generic cozy mystery episode.
Oh, hey. Glory be. So, we're using Shannara Chronicles because when it came out on MTV, the series, we both watched it separately but had very similar disgust for it. And it's interesting because it comes on the heels of Hunger Games being like the way Hunger Games and Twilight both being like, okay, we're getting kids reading again. Teenagers.
Harry Potter also.
Yes. A slow slope to being like, okay, kids are reading and we can make properties based on books and that'll have some cachet. In the 80s and 90s, we have a lot of fantasy properties to draw from. So because, you know, Lord of the Rings did pretty well in the films, and Game of Thrones is a thing. You know, I was joking when Melissa's like, why do you think they made the show?
I didn't realize it came out concurrent with Game of Thrones because I didn't watch Game of Thrones when it came out.
Oh, true.
So I didn't know it was a concurrent thing.
Now it seems like a lot of companies waited until Game of Thrones is over to try to compete, but they just stuck their bid out there in the middle, assuming that it would feel like counter programming because it's
cleaner.
It's a teen show.
Yeah,
it's not really trying to be like Game of Thrones. But what I want to compare it to is my mom has some things in my room and has kept them there. Everything from like old keepsake dolls to,
which is now in my room and it's terrifying.
Yeah. No comment.
It's all John's fault. Put it there. I know he did.
Dang it. This is, never mind. For a different podcast. But one of those things is one of those kind of thrillers that has it's a shot of the ocean and it's a single silhouetted figure walking on the beach, and in big, bright orange letters, No Man's Land. And so, like, I started reading it just because, hey, I can't find the other books that are in my room. Why not try this one? And it was an interesting beginning. It's like this revenge type story. This person just gets out of prison. So, like, you have that hook, right? And so what it made me think about and what motivated me to bring this up for this episode is, there's a difference to me between a generic thing that is so done before, it's so derivative, that you have absolutely no interest in these particular people, this story, versus something like we've talked about Dresden before on this podcast. There are things about it that have been done before, but there's a new twist on it that makes it interesting. You're wondering, how is Jim Butcher going to do a private eye story with a wizard? And Dresden is charismatic enough to make you care about the story, even though he might treat like the women in the story like any other noir detective would. You're still getting the fact that he's this charming, classic
snarky
gentleman guy who will defend the weak.
Right.
But also has this chip on his shoulder and is not the classic hero.
Right.
So tell us a little bit about where you come from with fantasy and what about the 80s and 90s fantasy made you pick up certain books and other books you're like, I see that you're trying to be like Lord of the Rings, but you're not.
Right.
Hitting
that was my, assessment of most fantasy I tried to read.
Uh-huh.
It was like, you're just trying to be Lord of the Rings and you're not. Which,
Were there a lot of, like, MacGuffins?
It was just very, like, they didn't bother trying to change the world at all. Like, you might as well have set it in Middle Earth.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And they didn't have, it wasn't anything different. It was like, oh, let's all go on a quest. There's an orphan kid that needs to go on the quest.
Right.
Usually, though, instead of it just being a hobbit, which is what endeared Lord of the Rings to so many people, it was like, oh, he's actually the son of the prince, and so, like, that's why he's awesome and everything. You're like, it's a dumb reason to be awesome and stuff. So, with all of that, I believe I read, this is terrible, because this is how it did not stick in my memory as much as I had hoped, although it has been a good long time, so don't hate on me. I think I read The Sword of Shannara, which is Terry Brooks, and it was similar enough to Lord of the Rings that I didn't have to do a lot of work to figure out what things were, but it was different enough, I felt, in the way that he did, like, what he did with the druids, and the whole idea that it's set in the far future after Earth went through an apocalypse, and that all of these races actually split off from humanity instead of the other way around. Like, in Lord of the Rings, it's almost like everything else died out and only humans were left. In this one, it's the opposite. Humans are still there,
right,
and then everything split off from there.
Right.
So I think he changed enough stuff to keep me interested. I did also try to read Wizard's First Rule, sorry, by Terry Goodkind, but was not enthralled, which bummed me because I actually liked Legend of the Secret, the show, which is terrible because it's really cheesy, but I enjoyed the cheesiness. Like, I thought that was part of the thing.
Right.
But it really wasn't.
But I can compare that to, like, something like The Flash. During a time when a lot of superhero stuff was trying to be super serious, it was kind of fun to have a show where they were, like, King Shark pops up.
Right.
And it's a big, huge Hulk-type villain.
Right.
And
it's
with a shark
goofy
face.
Because they know it's a little goofy. And it's not all of The Legend of the Secret of, like, the show. It's mostly the wizard guy is kind of very, like, whatever, like, the way a real curmudgeon would be, instead of just a Gandalf curmudgeon who is a curmudgeon but really loves everybody. Like, this guy's, no, just, I hate you all. Why are you bothering me? Go away.
You didn't really play D&D or anything back then.
No, I didn't. I found that later.
Okay, so it was really just, this was your main thing.
I was actually more into science fiction as a youngster than I was into fantasy.
Right.
Mostly because of this, because everything that was around was all very samey. So, like, give me something different and maybe I'll read it, but, like, most of the stuff I found was all very much the same.
And I think part of that is actually good praise for Tolkien, because if like 30 years hence from your publication, there are still people trying to ape your stuff.
Right.
And not able to really
get it any different.
I think that's good praise for him, but unfortunately that means that there isn't much real growth in the genre. But I think what we're going to do is try to use the pilot episode for Shannara Chronicles to talk about how some things don't connect for you as a viewer or reader when you're trying
to
do
fair,
a
even
fantasy.
Even a generic fantasy can still be entertaining if the story's good.
Right?
Like, your setting might not be, you know, brilliant or different, but if you had a good story set there, it could still be a lot of fun.
Right.
This didn't even give us that.
Yeah,
this,
because
and I don't know if it was the fault of the screenwriters or the book itself, because I did
not
read
Elfstones
of Shannara.
A couple different things, because it seems like there are a couple people dropping the ball. Yeah. Like, for example, when their troll is there, there's something with the special effects that I'm like, I'm not sure if, like, you were explaining to me based on the book.
Right.
All
they
these
don't
things spring
the show
from humanity. But I was like, why is this troll not look like a troll? And then there are things like that that are hyper-explained over and over again, but some things that are not explained at all. But anyway, my thing with the opening is that I don't like Princess Chick.
Yeah.
Because they don't give me a reason to like Princess Chick.
Right. We just
off the bat, Alfalfa? I'm just going to call Alfalfa. Alfalfa.
I can't say your name. Amberly, I think it is.
Okay, that's real name. I'm going to say Alfalfa. She is part of this, like, Hunger Games-like contest thing where she's going to become...
Which they set up in 2 seconds and 3 lines of dialogue.
Yes. Like, this is what we're doing, and run. Because, like, part of what annoys me about television in general is that there are actually producers that, like, I've heard screenwriters talk about this, that will tell them, these people are idiots. Treat them, the viewing public, as if they are morons. Because they're assuming that if you don't tell the audience multiple times what's happening, they're just going to be lost. Right? I don't know whether that's true or not. And I don't know that you need to necessarily serve those people. But to me, that's why you have some shows like this that are just like, okay, 3 lines of exposition and then action. Get into the action.
Right.
What to me fails about this is that you have, she wants to be one of the chosen to project,
to protect
the ancient elven tree, which we will get to.
Yes. Oh, do I have a rant about that tree?
Okay, I'm holding the bristle on her teeth.
Bridle.
Very good. So they blindfold the contestants, and then
there is literally just
a foot race in the woods. There are some ditches that they shoot to make it look like it's very deep and uncomfortable to fall in.
And then the other contestants can knock you out if they want to.
Sure. But, like, literally the big moment for the main character is she is, like, about to be seventh, and the first seven are going to become chosen people. And she's about to be seventh, somebody trips her, and whoops, she trips him back. And that's supposed to make me like this person.
Right. Well, it's the whole setup of she's a princess who's willing to sneak out of the castle to do something she's not supposed to be doing, who's had her uncle training her for this. Like, they do all this in 5 minutes. And it's not very well done.
And here's another thing.
And has a boyfriend in the race that she hasn't told yet that she's racing against him.
And that's another thing, is that I hate this about when they have a female protagonist, is that there's this weird thing where, like, it's supposed to be scandalous that she's doing this.
Yeah.
But her boyfriend, her friend, and all of the onlookers are just, like,
cheering her
on. Yeah. They're like, oh, this is cool. And it's like, I get that that's the emotion that you want the audience to feel. But if you're trying to talk about feminism, it's supposed to be hard for the woman to do the thing.
Yes.
And even...
as opposed to just everybody cheering her on, and then the 2 seconds we get of the supposedly kick-ass elf captain... because we haven't seen her do anything other than smile because the princess is there.
Right.
I'm like, really, guys? Like, can we...
And even if there is a patriarchy of any kind, if you still want this female character to be respected, she needs to do something tough. Not run with her eyes blinded. And to me, what I was thinking as a non-fantasy person, as somebody that didn't read the series... what I was trying to think is are they trying to set up that elves have extra sensory perception and that it's supposed to be cool that they get blindfolded? And so, but
they didn't really show that in the show.
No,
they showed her counting, like she was counting steps.
Right.
To get around trees and stuff. And
so
like,
what might have been cool is if they had somebody training her, like say, I'm rewriting this opening scene. So you show her training and you have... intercut between her in the actual race and the thing. She's trying to get over these specific obstacles. But then you show somehow through how she trains that she has some kind of extrasensory thing and she's trying to train that ability that she's trying to...
Plus, I also think it was dumb that they were letting her train on the actual race course.
Hmm.
Right? Like, it wasn't like, oh, I've never seen this course before and I have to navigate it blindfolded. No, I get to, like, practice on it every night and count all the steps between the trees. And, like, what is that? That doesn't make that...
called nepotism.
Yes.
All right, it's time to talk about this stupid tree.
Anyway, okay.
Because
so let me tell you...
this was the big thing for both of us.
Yes. If your entire premise is based on something this stupid, I will not read your book. So there's this tree this big old ancient tree.
Right, the
tree
one that the Chosen are supposed to...
For which they are racing to protect. And according to their legends, and they present it this way, that this is just folklore. The granddaddy elf king tells them this is just a fairy tale. We know it's not that important, but you're all going to be the chosen to protect this tree. Because this tree was planted to keep the demons that we defeated in this war in their prison. Okay. Supposedly, and unless I'm misreading how this opened, because to me it sounded like Granddaddy Elf was there when this war happened, and they closed actual demons under this tree, but not directly under the tree, but they're protected because this tree is there. Why would you tell the entire next generation that it was pointless, that it's not true? To the point that when a demon actually shows up and kills people in the palace, no one believes it. They don't believe in real magic. They don't believe that there's demons. None of it.
You deserve
to have your country torn apart by demons because you didn't tell anybody that this was a thing. That's my rant on this stupid tree.
I hope everybody can still hear. To me, the analogy that you can make about this is, what if all teenagers assumed that like planes weren't real, and they all still trained to be able to protect like this one.
They all still trained to be
like aircraft carrier,
right?
And so like something happens where the aircraft carrier gets demolished, and it's because they didn't believe
it
was real
anymore.
But then somehow we're all open to, you know,
nuclear attack from foreign powers.
Yeah.
Like, hi.
It's like, why would they value that position?
Right.
If it was only symbolic.
All crap. What's the point? And then, like,
becomes a plot point for him, for the king.
Right.
It's like, why? What do you want to go down as the king that believed in demons?
That was
fantasies?
Mad enough to believe in demons, and you're like, but they're real. Like, why? He was there. He knows they're real. Like, it would have been more interesting if they pulled a King Lear kind of thing. And they all thought he was insane.
Right.
And he was trying to tell them, no, but they're real.
Right.
That would have been cool.
And that to me is why I would say...
Or if everybody in the war had died and nobody had actually been there and nobody remembered. But, like, Druid dude shows up who can throw stuff around with his mind and people still don't believe this. I'm like,
take a deep breath.
Sorry. I have serious problems with the whole premise of this stupid show.
But that's why I say I think it's a multiple... tier problem is that what it feels like to me is the writers did not write in lines to make it so that you understood why he would frame it this way. So it's actually by the things that he's saying, there's this contradiction of this is this important thing, but don't worry, there aren't actual demons. Then also it's, I think, an acting problem in the sense that maybe between the direction and the acting choices, if you're the king and you want to sell this, you could make his character like kind of like a worm tongue type thing.
Okay.
Where like you set it up that maybe there's a reason why.
Right. That
he's
not talking.
He's lying. And it could be that.
But from what I remember, I got further before in the show, watched multiple episodes, and it never comes up that he was
right,
lying
because,
for a reason.
Like, you could easily have, maybe there's other kings, and, like, say there's a very secular king or something that's coming through, and in order to impress that guy, he's like, oh, yeah, all this
oh,
stuff
yeah,
is symbolic.
Folklore. It's fine.
And, you know, there's a specific reason why he would pretend that this is not important. That's one thing, but they try to have their cake and eat it too.
Yeah.
They try to have it be super important to protect this thing. And then not only is it like, if this tree completely dies, do these things come back? There's a leaf that falls.
Yes.
And every leaf that falls, something bad happens.
Yes.
And he does not make this clear to anyone that if one of these leaves comes
off
the tree.
Now, that to be fair, he might not know.
But as you said,
but
we don't know either way.
Right.
We don't know.
We don't know what he believes. We don't know, because like I said, he knew the druid guy, so he knows at least that magic is real.
Right. And he's old enough to have
been around when this thing happened.
Right. So you would think that he would know something.
Something.
But we don't know what he knows.
Yeah.
Or they could have set up something like with the druid being more, just being smarter than him. And like the king is like, listen, I don't know anything about this. I just know they just said protect the tree. And maybe I don't want to cause panic, but they don't give
give you anything. That would have been a good one too. Let's not cause panic. Let's take care of it quietly.
Right. Yeah.
While demons are ripping up my court. So, I said, that guy deserves to have his kingdom burn.
Right. And it's sad because it's Gimli.
Yeah.
And
Charmy Stavies.
Is a good.
He deserves better than that.
But I think I would blame the director in terms of the acting wasn't such that I understood what his motivation was. I think he's capable of showing that, but they were probably just giving him nothing to work with. What the only thing you really get of any drama between him and his son. His son is starting to doubt that he has the capability to lead. And they do a good job setting that up where he's constantly second-guessing him. But at the same time, because you don't know whose side you're supposed to be on. Because he just kind of seems petulant. He's like, listen, I can do this.
Yeah, let me take over the kingdom.
I'm John Rhys Davies. Shut up.
your argument isn't valid, whippersnapper.
So I think before we go to break, I think we can still talk about some of this stuff. We move on to, put down, Cool Girl is Cool, and also Obi-Wan. Before we get there.
Is this the witch chick?
Yeah, okay, so wait. So I haven't set this up properly. Will is introduced.
Yes.
His mom is dying. It's pretty much the Anakin type thing. He is the guy living in the middle of nowhere. He's half elf. His mom is dying. She has these stones, stones from his father. And she's like, these are very important. Find the druid. Because there's a druid. Oh, also, tree woke up. So did druid. Very good.
Druid was frozen and sleeping for a long time. And now he's awake.
Right. So, you get this idea. He needs to find, rather than Gandalf finding him, he needs to find his Gandalf.
Yes.
Okay. He leaves to go do that, but then runs into this chick. And so that's why I put,
Cool Girl is Cool. Rovers, right?
Right. Because so she saves him from a troll. And that's where we get that weird thing where I'm like, why is the troll in a gas mask?
Do you want me to explain to you why the troll's in a gas mask?
No, I could really care less. But it's one of those things, like I was saying, that I only know as a non-fantasy, non-lore knowledgeable of this thing person. I don't know this is a troll until Robert Chick says it's a troll. She comes in, kills it. And so you get that beat like with Luke and Obi-Wan where kills
or scares off the Sandman.
Tusken Raiders. And so she comes in and kills the troll. And then I put no room for the Holy Ghost because in the very next scene, he's riding behind her and on her horse, but has her like his hands around her. And I'm like, listen, you can't have them have snarky love-hate dialogue already.
Yeah.
And then have them be this close in proximity because this is not how this works. You can't.
I mean, unless it was supposed to be that she's already hitting on him. Because as we see in the next scene, she was only hitting on him.
But that's another thing is that
stuff.
I get his motivation. He's just on this adventure thing. But it's another thing where you don't get either of their motivations in being together.
Like, well, no, I understand hers. So if there are people called rovers, and someone shows up that looks like they cobbled their clothes together from crap they found in the that's like
a mark.
Then you know, okay, chick is gonna take his stuff. Like that's just what they do. I'm assuming rovers are like some kind of marauding bands of people that sweep through and steal your things.
Yeah, okay.
Why he's just dumb.
Right.
That's all I have for him.
He has special MacGuffin. And so what I compared it to while watching it was rather than following Frodo and his band of friends.
Right.
You're following just Pippin. Pippin took the ring and peaced out and got seduced by a random, like, ranger chick that was just like, I can get this guy. Yeah. And
basically,
so
basically, that's what happened.
Literally, this chick sets it up for him.
Yeah.
Says, take off all your clothes and go into my hovel over there. And it's like, real, like,
yeah.
Because you, I mean, you've made that case about spy stuff.
Yeah.
If you're guarding the weapons of mass destruction.
Right. And someone starts hitting on you, they are not after you.
Yes. So, literally, you just, like, take all the stuff. And then he's in this bathtub, and she's like, drink this special drink I made for you.
Like, and I'm just like, even Luke wasn't that stupid.
Right. So that's the thing to me is that,
like, he was naive, but he wasn't that stupid.
I think he's a good charismatic actor.
Yeah.
They're both actually pretty good actors. But I can't say that much about Elphaba and and
no, yeah, and, the
and
other
pretty guy
the
number
whole
one
elf
and
in
number
court
two.
Drives me insane because I don't like any of them.
These and these are types character types that I like more anyway. So
yeah, because the Rover chick is pretty cool. The Rover chick has a cool storyline.
Right.
Like, her dad's about to sell her off to get married.
We'll get to that. But with this setup, I'm just like, if this guy is this dumb, I don't care about this story. Why do I care about this guy that has, this is like the last thing he has from his father. And because he's like flirting with this girl, you're just like, sure, you can take a look at it. Oh, I'm feeling sleepy now. And then he goes away. And it's like, it's that type of thing where, like, if you're going to make somebody that dumb, you need to at least make them funny.
Yeah.
And make it, like, Abbott and Costello. Like, you need there to be humor. Otherwise, it just looks like you're following an idiot.
Which we kind of see that they're trying to do, like, once he meets up with the druid, they kind of make him the goofy one to the druid straight man.
Right.
But I don't think it comes off well enough.
No. I think they have good, better,
it.
Like, you're
they
right.
Have
they have
chemistry,
better chemistry.
But it's just still, I don't know, not enough.
I think we could probably get this before the break. I said that so there was a kind of mediocre reunion between the druid and King
Elf
Pants.
Like, King Greddy, Granddaddy Elf King meets this druid guy who he hasn't seen in, like, 300 years, who he thought died in the war. The same war, by the way, that, you know, the tree is dying from. You know.
And so it's weird because I see one of the things that I appreciate about, especially about something like Lord of the Rings, is that because he's done all this history work, and like Peter Jackson was really good at following that and making sure it all is in the screenplay, is in the acting, you get, like, these people have history. A ranger does not talk to hobbits.
Yeah.
When they meet him, they're instantly suspicious of him because they have the secret MacGuffin thing. So, like, the fact that these two have history, you expect him to be happy to see him again, but he is not happy enough to seem sincerely happy.
Right.
But he is not, like,
he's not being all elf stoic either.
Right.
Because I know they tend to do that, but none of the elves have been really stoic in this one,
so
it's
like,
not like you're expecting that.
What brings it up is that the son character is instantly suspicious of the
Yeah, it's like, who's this human? Get this human out of my castle.
Right. But
there
he's not...
Humans.
Whatever it was, the direction or John Rhys Davies just being like, this show is not going
to
get picked up.
It's like, I just
it's
need
just
to die.
Like,
please
it doesn't,
kill my character
You don't
off.
Know what you're supposed to get from their interaction. So it was just kind of like, I don't know whether they ended on bad terms or... It's just, like, because he's trying to get him to...
Well, apparently he thought he ran off with his sister.
Right.
Or daughter, whatever.
But that's the thing, like, I should have seen this in...
Yeah, but that, like, should have happened somewhere, yeah, I don't know.
In the subtext of their talking.
Yeah.
And he's just
kind
of pissed off.
What'd you do with my daughter? Would have been a better greeting than, like,
right.
Oh, hey,
and
I haven't seen you in a couple hundred years. How you doing?
Right. And then he basically just yells, he just scolds him for making them all believe... And then he doesn't have an excuse.
No.
He's just like, yeah, I just kind of felt like, you know, doing that.
Right, he doesn't bring up the druid sleep there. Like, he could have said, hey, I didn't have a choice. I needed to go to sleep then. Because, like,
right.
I was going to die.
We need to take a break before we...
Before we rant anymore.
Sleep
we'll be back. We're going to rant some
after
more.
After the bump, we're going to do...
Not a bump. It's a mid-roll. Dang it.
After the mid-roll, we're going to talk about how drugging is not cool. Okay. So in this era of hashtag Me Too, I feel like this show is irresponsible in showing. So the cool girl drugs
dumb boy.
Guy, big shocker.
Yeah.
and takes his stuff. What's his name? Druid dude. Will.
Finds Will. And we don't know how. They never explain how he finds out where he is.
That's true.
He just randomly shows up when it's convenient.
Right, and they set up that he has telepathy.
Yes.
But I think maybe they tried to get away with he also knows where people are, or like that it's ill-defined that way. That like...
Oh, I guess so, too, because they do talk about, like, why can't you find the anti-druid? I'm just going to call him that, because I don't know if they're calling Morlocks or what they call him. The anti-druid guy. It's like, can't you just find him and go get him? And he's like, no, he's protected.
Right.
So, like, maybe you can just locate people.
Right. So he shows up, and they start their whole banter thing. Like I said, the actors do well with what they're given.
Yes.
But what they're given isn't...
It's not much.
And it... Like you're saying, like there was a point where it just started recycling information.
Yes.
And it was interesting because it seems to me almost like it's like they remind you of things that you should already know, but then maybe they add a sentence's worth of information. So they're like,
Remember this other thing we were talking about? This is also true.
Yeah. And it's kind of like it drags out all the drama from it.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't seem like, okay, this person wants this thing, and they're going to do what they want. Because even with Will needing to find the druid, I still don't know what he wants.
Right.
You get this vague idea that maybe he wants to not be there. Like, he says he wants to be a healer early on. So it's this kind of thing, like, at least with Luke, when Luke meets Obi-Wan, there's this promise of, I'm going to train you to be a Jedi.
Right.
So there's a difference, and so we get that speech from the druid, where he says, you are a Shannara, and so I'm going to train you to be able to do the magics. Right? Oh. My warrior sister just vanquished a demon that was behind me.
Trying to get you.
You're
lucky it was a small one, because otherwise I would have been okay with it.
Everybody, rest easy tonight.
I killed
know that the
millipede.
Bug. So yeah, him being a Shannara, he's like promising him, I'm going to help you realize your destiny. But it doesn't even, like, and I think that guy sells the lines that he's saying, but there's still this disconnect of, with Star Wars, he wants to be in the galactic, like, fleet.
Yeah.
And so, like, he has these aspirations. But healer is much different than I'm a crazy wizard boy.
Right.
Who is a part of this race that I don't even know exists. At least with the Jedi, you get the idea that Luke has heard stories of the Jedi.
And he was very excited about, wait, you knew my dad and you fought with the...
Right.
You know all this
and,
stuff.
And he sees this princess and he's like, oh, okay, I can save her. Like, there are all these things that if you are, even if you're trying to set up, like, this is a very naive and simple and innocent character who's willing to go on some kind of adventure, you still need to justify, like, some of what you were saying and have there be multiple, like, in that one story.
Well, Mom told me to find a druid. I guess I gotta go find the druid.
There's multiple points of interest because you have, your dad was a Jedi. You can be a Jedi, too. I have a very specific mission for you to carry out. We need to rescue the princess from the Empire. So, and especially when he goes back to Uncle Owen
and
Aunt Peru.
And now your family's dead.
Yeah. So he doesn't have any other choice unless he wants to go to Mos Eisley or the cantina and just drink for the rest of his life. Like, in order to do, like, it makes sense for him to just go on this adventure. So I feel like we're missing that with that set up, and especially, like I said, because he's just been a doofus so far, I'm not really into him being the chosen one. I'm much more interested in the druid and his thing, because they do a good job of at least setting up him being this mysterious character. He just wakes up and he's like doing all the magics, and so what is, because you said you like him, what is it you like about
the
druid boy?
I like that he is very just pragmatic, right? He's like, look,
correct,
we got this thing we got to do. Let me go do the thing. Like,
yeah,
you know, this is what I do. I do the thing.
Right.
even though magic costs you things, like him, it hurts him physically to do magic.
Oh, yeah, and they get that across with his expressions.
So, like, stuff. I like the way they do his storyline. The rest of the storylines are trash, but his storyline is fantastic. He wakes up, he does the chant to make himself live, so you get the idea that, like, this is weird, like, he was asleep or dead or something, and now he's alive, and now he's gonna go do this quest, and then they wake up the bad guy. The first bad guy
that wakes up. So I was gonna bring it up. The
bad guy wakes up and mirrors his waking up. He says the same exact lines. Yeah. And so you get, oh, he used to be a druid.
Yeah.
I don't know what he is now, but he used to be a druid.
Yeah, and I like that, the visual effects and that line and the makeup and stuff. They sold that thing waking up. It was a little odd when the girl woke up too, because they do a lot of they do that trope of like, okay, there's a lot of weird makeup on this guy's face, some of it that might look like blood of some kind. Let's have a make out with this girl,
right?
Just because
that's
creepy.
But I think they were trying to set up how she's going to operate in the Elven Kingdom.
Uh-huh.
So I liked that thing. They woke the bad guy up. They have the druid doing his thing, like, everybody's idiots. Why am I the only smart person in this room? Mm. I always like that attitude, even when you're, I don't know, it's a funny
attitude. Even when you're so angry at the other characters, at least there's a guy.
At least there's somebody who's competent in this show. They wake up the girl.
Why did I put shiny book dance?
Oh, when does the wind in the...
Oh, yes, okay.
He's showing off his magic for the kid. That
made sense. That's you.
Yeah. They do that with the doppelganger chick because they want you to get across that she can tell what you want her to look like.
Right.
So she comes out looking like this gorgeous to make out with the ugly guy. And then he's like, no, I want you to be creepy. Go infiltrate the Elven Court. Mm. So she does that. Then...
You know what?
What?
Darn it. I'm rewriting this script to be so much better. You were saying, like, so they show that she transforms into what the princess looks like.
Right.
And you're supposed to get that because when you see her already transformed, she stabs Prince Dude.
The boyfriend.
And then her eyes flash silver. Red, and then it kind of fades and stuff. Why, when she first wakes up, did they not just show her transform into princess? Because then you wouldn't have just needed the eyes.
Then you wouldn't have this weird, like, what? It's like, oh, that's right. She's
because
she ran into that guy, and that guy likes the princess, so she knew.
Right. Oh, so they wanted it to still be traumatic.
Yes.
They wanted you to not know
was
her.
Until, anyway. And then they do the whole bad druid calls up good druid and says, hey, I know you're awake, and I'm going to kill you all, and hurts him from wherever. He does a Darth Vader. He, like, force hurts him from the other side of the continent or wherever the thing is that he's at. And he's
That was okay. So let's get into this. I think so. He goes into a cave.
Yes.
Gets shiny book. And what was weird was he opens up the thing, and like you said, it shows that he's in pain to use magic. And I thought that was cool. Because that was one of those things that I didn't readily have an answer for. But it didn't bother me because it seemed, at least it set up, okay, this person, it's hard for him to do magic stuff.
It looked painful for him to do it. Like, you could tell. Right. He acted that fairly well.
But then, it's weird because I'm like, I kind of wanted there to be a bigger emotional response to it actually being there. And I think maybe that's why I put shiny book dance. Because, like, you have this, it's one of those weird things that, like, I think is a disconnect about sometimes in fantasy, where it's so, it reminds me of, like, you know, bad Shakespeare. Good Shakespeare, you get somebody like Kenneth Branagh, who acts like a 20-something guy whose dad just died and whose uncle is with his mom, and he's losing his mind. And so you get this idea of, like, you want to be able to, even though the language is archaic, get across the emotions that this character is going through.
Right.
So with this, I think it's one of those tropes of a generic fantasy thing that people don't emote in the way that you would expect someone to emote in a situation. So I feel like with him, part of the benefit of him being stoic and pragmatic is that he is seems up more above the rest of the characters, and that he knows what's going on. But at the same time, when he gets the book, it's just kind of like, oh, this is cool. Like, oh, yeah, do what I have to do. So anyway, so he gets the book, and then but then you're that was another visual effects thing that tripped me up, in addition to the fake out with the princess, was you're supposed to get that the anti-druid is hurting him from far away.
Right.
But the way that they choose to portray it is that it's right there in the room with him.
Yeah, like he envisions him there.
And then he wakes up, and then Will is there, and I'm just like, wait. So his hand is affected just like it was in this vision that he had, but the thing is not there, the anti-druid.
Yeah. I think they did a really good job with that in The Last Jedi, where they were showing Rey and Anakin, not Anakin, sorry. Kylo Ren. Communicating, because they showed them looking kind of off into space, but like it melding into, like the other person was there.
Right.
But then you could see from the other side where the person was looking back. So, like, if they had shown the anti-druid's side of it, where he's still in his little fort, but can see the druid, it might have been better to communicate that they were both still in their own place, but looking at each other through whatever communication
they also did another stupid thing what they do in vision things, and it's one of those weird things where, like, you're trying to communicate menace, but rather than the actor doing things to communicate that, you have weird camera tricks. So they did this thing where it's like they rack focus, and it's like, and they do weird shaky cam stuff, and there's lights, and it's like, that's to me what communicated vision.
Right. As opposed to this is some kind of communication.
Right.
Yeah.
So that was weird.
But I still think it was an effective, scary thing to do at that point in the story where it's like, oh,
when I found out what it was, I was like, okay, that's an interesting thing to happen. So I put Devil in Disguise, the princess, anti-druid.
It's a demon chick.
Yeah, shapeshifter chick.
Shapeshifter.
Comes in and kills all the chosen. Just like flies running right under the radar.
Yeah.
And kills a bunch of people.
That is now the dog.
Yes.
He's now the king's dog.
That was such a funny like thing that's supposed to be menacing, but it's like, oh, this fluffy, beautiful creature is now a demon. Okay. I put Prince is cool, but Demon Delusion is cul-de-sac. I'm not sure what I meant by that.
Oh, maybe the prince that wants to become king is cool?
What I meant by cul-de-sac was like the plot cul-de-sac. I'm trying to figure out what the... because I feel like there were a couple situations in which I mentioned something about Hemingway had some kind of plot distinct, because I think when you read a Hemingway story, what's strange is that there's not really much movement in the sense that like big dramatic things happen, but when you and it's a brilliant thing about his writing that when you finish one of the stories it seems done. And it's an interesting thing because you were used to, with especially in this age of television and film and stuff, for there needs to be somebody needs to die, there needs to be some dramatic, you know, thing that happens.
Well, the problem with this is the setup basically is going to be Monster of the Week, right? It's what demon just got released, and how do we kill it?
Right. Hold on. But what that brings up is that a story cannot have much motion or movement, but can have motion. But then conversely, there can be a lot of dramatic things happening, but not anything moving forward.
Not going anywhere.
So it's one of the things like you could critique like a Michael Bay movie for doing, that you have a lot of things moving, but nothing is really happening. And so like you have a steel cage deathmatch with Optimus Prime and Megatron, and they destroy 50 buildings, but nothing's happening. It's just for the sake of blowing things up.
Yeah.
Anyway, that happens once with the princess and the rover, in the sense that, like you were saying, she did not pack food, I guess.
Yeah.
Because
so she has to steal food from this
when
chick
the rover is like threatening her, she takes her bread and gives her a bracelet.
Yeah.
And that's all.
I'm
that
assuming
happens.
That's setting it up at some point so that the rover can then prove that she's talked to the princess at some point in the future.
But that's what it felt like, was that there were different things set up only for the purpose of moving the plot, but actually don't accomplish anything in terms of the story.
Right.
And whatever this note was, the show's not good enough for me to remember. What I meant was that there were certain characters that I didn't mind, that I thought were okay, but there wasn't something that about the story that was driving me.
Right. Because like I said,
to like it.
At this point, I realize, oh, this is just going to be Monster of the Week, and they're going to get the seed, take it to a place, bring it back, and have to fight a demon every week.
Right.
And that's all that the setup is. Like, it's not like Lord of the Rings, where you have this quest and you have no idea what they're going to run into on the way and you actually care.
Right.
Or, like, who's the actual big bad guy, and then the whole, like, surprise of Saruman being a bad guy, too, and all this other stuff.
And I think
it's not like even, I don't know. It was they smallvilled it, and I'm mad.
But I think that can bring it to our kind of, we have a bit of time. Oh.
One other thing. Okay. Random insert
excitement
of Girlfriend in the Fridge at the end,
okay,
which they didn't even give you enough time to care about said girlfriend.
Right,
you didn't even know she was the girlfriend until the last 10 minutes of this show.
Right. So allow me to explain. Druid guy, because he's been asleep for half a century.
No, more than that. 3 centuries.
Oh, okay. Very good. That's another funny thing about the show is that Melissa was much
facts.
More perceptive than I was in catching things. But it made me feel like she was defending the show.
No, I wasn't.
Because she was correcting me. But the point was just that she knew what was going on better than I did. So for 300 years he's been in
Druid sleep.
Druid sleep, yes. They actually call it Druid sleep.
Yeah, we got no better names than that. That's what it is.
Yeah, really creative. he's been in Druid sleep and he had a girlfriend.
Who was apparently the elf princess.
Who we did not talk to about
going
into I need to go sleepy by now. So she's real pissed when he shows up because Alfalfa is hiding away in her little bungalow. And so when he goes to see her again, he makes peace with her long enough for her to get killed by
the demon.
This demon thing. And that's how the thing ends, is with Will. Druid gets hockey pucked off the cliff into the
girl
ocean.
Gets eaten.
And you're just like,
girlfriend,
well, that's nice.
Eaten.
He's
yeah.
like, we can count on him. But then Alfalfa and Will are like,
and Will
trembling
is
in
for
their
some
boots.
Reason trying to protect her, even though he has never fought
well,
ever.
Well, he saw her naked, so.
Well, of course. So now he has to defend her with like 3 blue stones that he has no idea how to
yes.
use. And no weapon.
Let's
as
hope
opposed
this works.
To, as opposed to elf princess chick, who we have seen knock her own boyfriend out. And we knows how to fight because she's been training to be the defender of this tree that nobody cares about.
All right.
So,
that's
how I feel about that story.
We have a limited amount of time. And what I would like to do is talk about, to me, there, especially after doing Inklings Month, which, to self-promote a little bit,
Inklings Month
April,
was great.
Was Inklings Month.
I miss Inklings Month.
Go back into our, I wonder why. You can go back into our archives in April and check that out. There's a lot of stuff, there are a lot of qualities to their writing, which I would call literary. And I think what was a bad marketing choice with certain authors, so let's say like Neil Gaiman, people like that, there was this idea is if you are more poetic with your writing, that means that you're doing more literary things. And I don't think that is the case. With somebody like Tolkien, even though you don't know necessarily everything about the ring, you get this idea of this was a big temptation for Gollum. It was a big temptation for Bilbo. It is now my burden. And they do a lot to set up
that
this small creature has something that could tear the world apart. So what I think is a big literary device with that is that there's this idea of that everybody can relate to of if you put this thing on, you will be the most powerful person of all time. And there's this temptation that's associated with that, that even if you're not a fan of fantasy, like, for example, our mother watched the cartoons of Lord of the Rings, and did not it was not translated to her within those works, just how important, just how valuable, just how profound those stories are. But then when she saw the movie, it's once you learn that these chubby, like, lazy, not adventurous people are being given the fate of the world, and they have to learn how to take this responsibility and use it. Then once somebody gets you to understand that, it doesn't matter if this person has polka dots or if they have three heads, like, you're going to identify with that thing.
Right.
And I think that's the main thing that you could say about a generic fantasy work, is that whether you're just trying to copy what people already know works, and then you just feel like you're trying to ape Tolkien or George R. R. Martin or something, or you do have something, but it's not relatable. You're trying to lead with, oh, this is my world building stuff, and these characters, you do something like the race at the beginning of the show, where, like, I'm not impressed by somebody winning a foot race.
Right.
Like, you need to do some work to make this person, ingratiate them to the audience somehow. Book, movie, TV show, doesn't matter. So that, to me, is a big part of what I identify as a literary merit thing that transcends genre. And it doesn't necessarily have to do with doing something that's more literary, capital L, or more, hardcore fantasy, like, I feel like I'm in a D&D campaign.
Right.
It's just more about creating a character that you can identify with and giving them a worthy...
What a follow-through quest.
Quest.
Because even stuff like, I read one called, I think it's called The Black Watch, where they started getting grimdark on it, too, because that was another thing that happened around the same time.
Right.
I wanted to, or it was a Black Company, that's what it's called, Black Company. It wasn't,
yeah, I think especially after Game of Thrones was published.
Yeah.
I think that was a big thing within the genre.
Thing. Even though I wasn't, like, crazy about that kind of stuff, I don't prefer grimdark stuff. The character was interesting enough that I wanted to see what happened at the end, right? Like, I wanted to read through the whole thing. It wasn't like, oh, I got partway and I'm like, I'm not finishing this. Like, I got partway through Wizard's First Rule and I'm like, yeah, no, buddy, I'm sorry, I can't do this. But yeah, so you need to identify with your people. And to be fair, a lot of people liked those other ones that I didn't like. You know, that's fine, that's just me. And some of them did great. But the show did not do very well because it didn't do its work at all.
And I think part of me feels like there were even characters within Game of Thrones that I feel like it was such a universal thing that I got swept up in the excitement of having this fantasy show that everybody was actually watching, that I put up with a lot of stuff that I probably wouldn't just for any other show. And I think that there are certainly things that you can do. Like, I think you can make the case that, like, you can say that there were cheap things about that show, like Tyrion just being this guy that everybody craps on all the time.
Right.
And so, like, it's not even very difficult to do something that might be annoying sometimes, and you still put up with it because you want to see this person get their comeuppance, you want to see this other person get rewarded for the hard work that they put in. You know, there's a lot of stuff in that show that, like, for him, like, I was rooting for Tyrion, And
like I said, I read an interesting article about Game of Thrones where it was more that one. The reason they could get away with killing people off the way they did was because it wasn't about the characters per se. Like, there were different characters that people were rooting for, but it was more about the sociology. It was more about the politics, right? It was more about we want House Stark to win. Didn't necessarily mean you wanted this person in Stark to win, but you wanted this household that stood for nobility and what was right in the world to win, as opposed to me, who wanted, Dragon Dystopia to take over.
But
you picked the big overarching organization culture that you wanted to prevail.
Right.
Not necessarily individual characters.
Right. And that was what was kind of my love-hate relationship with that show, was that there were certain things that made it seem like this show wants me to want Daenerys to win. While at the same time, they're not doing things to show that she is a good ruler.
Right.
And that seemed to be a lot of people had a lot of gripes about the ending of that show. But one of my main ones was that they were setting up that she was a bad ruler when all that she had done this whole series is burn people alive that were slaveholders and, you know, these horrible people.
Right.
So it's like you can't really make the case that her killing all the Nazis is adequate foreshadowing for her killing innocent people in the last.
So here's a thought on the end of Game of Thrones. Don't know why we're getting off on this topic, but here's a thought.
I mean, I didn't.
This should have gone the way the Hunger Games ended. Because they storm the castle at the end of the Hunger Games.
Uh-huh.
And they do the same exact thing. The castle puts all the innocent people between them and the resistance.
Uh-huh.
Like, they'd line up kids on the outside of the
right.
thing. And Katniss realizes that both there are people on the resistance that are willing to hurt the kids anyway,
mm-hmm.
and that the person who's going to be president next is going to run another Hunger Games to punish the people that they're taking mm-hmm. over. And she's like, screw that, I'm killing the next president. Like, mm-hmm. this place isn't any better than So I wanted Jon Snow to see Daenerys lose her mind, take over King's Landing, and be a horrible ruler, and him kill her. That's what that ending would have looked like. And it would have made a whole lot more sense.
Actually her be a ruler.
Yes, actually to get her to see how terrible of a ruler she was.
Uh-huh.
Because like she's like, okay, now I got it. Yeah, now what do you do, sweetie? You have
right.
no idea how to run this,
uh-huh.
like, at all.
Right.
And have him realize, oh, this is going to go really bad. and even if he dies doing it, because he probably would have,
uh-huh.
he at least would have been like, I'm not letting that
uh-huh.
happen. Like, a good Stark should have.
But
and
I think
ended that way.
To that credit, to me, this is a good way to round it back, that I feel like Hunger Games, it was very much part of the whole show, or not show, the whole series.
Movie, series, books, whatever.
Yeah, the whole thing. That was, I think, threaded more even, and I think that's probably a way to describe what I think makes something have more literary merit than just this is an entertaining thing, is that Hunger Games, baked into the DNA of the whole thing, was political commentary. And so what I think Game of Thrones sometimes made the false equivalency of was this person's political machinations and fighting makes them worthy of being ruler.
Yeah.
And so they had certain decisions where a person made the noble decision and sometimes were sacrificed himself to do it. But it wasn't really as much about ruling. And so what I thought was cool about the Hunger Games was that because she became a symbol, she was in the conversation of how are we going to win this revolution.
Right.
And so because she was just kind of like the poster child for this, they were starting to do like propaganda and stuff like that. She was in the position to understand they're starting to get just as bad as
right.
the
people that were
previous
trying to defeat.
Thing. So like the fact that they didn't really give, I haven't read the books, but in the show, they didn't really give Daenerys the opportunity to, it was mostly military campaigns that she started.
But they showed her like at each place she went.
We were going to have to take another break.
Anyway.
Yeah. After the break, we will summarize our thoughts.
Yes.
And maybe talk a little bit more about the Hunger Games. Who knows?
Okay.
Closing
so what I was going to say, they show her seeing herself as a savior every place she stops.
Right.
So it made sense to me that she would continue to do that and see herself as the savior of King's Landing.
Uh-huh.
Right? She's here to save you from the horrible, evil, wicked Cersei that we all wanted to watch die anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Like, great. But then she gets the big prize that she wanted and realizes, oh my gosh, this sucks.
Uh-huh.
Right? And then becomes this horrible person because she has to deal with all this stuff. Maybe not as a horrible person in the same way Cersei was, but anyway. So that's why I was pulling for, that would make sense to me, that she would get there and get lost. And
no, you make a good point. What I'm saying is that the show wasn't about ruling anything.
True.
And so what I feel like the show made the false equivalency of was the dragon melts the throne at the end, as if having a ruling class is a problem.
Right.
And you can say what you want about them showing despotic people, but it made it seem like anarchy was both the answer and not the answer at the same time. Because they have the person that sees themselves as the savior person. But all of a sudden, because they want to make a political point, that person loses their mind at the end of the show. And that what seems like a beneficent thing automatically becomes a tyrannical thing. So I agree with you. It would have been more effective to me if she had that role and it wasn't like she forgot everything that she learned on that in that last episode just to make a point. Rather, because she rules and people worship her, maybe she starts getting this idea, like, make the season longer.
Right.
Like, 4 episodes longer.
Yeah.
And slowly she starts deteriorating.
And then we would have had more of that.
Right.
And made more sense.
So that to me is that. But, like I said, like, I feel like what I liked about The Hunger Games that I feel like that did differently was that Katniss was given the opportunity to learn as she was going. And what was interesting about her that I liked was that she straight up murders, like, a random person during their thing because they just happen to show up. Like, they pop up through, like, a grating thing.
Right.
And, like, it shows her make compromises. And so you I think if you're paying attention as you're reading, you're not necessarily thinking this is a moral, like, paragon.
Right, right.
But at the same time, she sees, oh, I know what's happening here. They're going to be just as bad as these other people.
Right.
And I think it does a good job of because she's actually alongside the potential new president this whole time, she has much more of a grounds to make that decision.
Right.
And I think that was a big thing with the last season was that these characters fall in love and out of love and betray each other.
Yeah, inside of how many shows?
Inside of how many episodes. And it's like, just because the show needs them to make those decisions, it wasn't really earning that as a momentous, dramatic thing. Anyway, talk about plot cul-de-sacs. But no, I feel like that it's a good discussion to have because you need to know how to make your characters have dramatic impact within your story. And I feel like you're saying, when you're working with a fantasy story, there are characters that sometimes stand for ideas. And you want to be able to still have the choices have dramatic irony, have dramatic reality within the show, even if you're thinking, this is Captain America. He stands for America.
Right. But they still need to be people.
Yeah. So it's an interesting balance because it's much more common to that genre than anything else.
Because as you said, and I like how you described fantasy as this, your metaphors are the setting.
Right.
Right? Your world, your politics, the world itself is your metaphor.
Right. So, like, for example, you have Gimli and Legolas, who are traditionally, their
peoples hate each other.
Yeah, their people hate each other, and they have traits that are, like, specific to their people. But to make it dramatically satisfying, he has them saddled with protecting the ring bearer.
Right.
And it's through that burden, this journey that they have, that they actually grow to have this really beautiful friendship. And it makes it cool because it's not just, the point is not just, it's not as allegorical as there are some people who are greedy and some people who are snobby.
Right. And this is how they learn to get along.
Yeah. It's just, they feel like real characters.
Right.
But you get that through their journey together. So don't try to be like Tolkien, but take lessons from him.
Yes.
That you can apply.
Be like Tolkien in his skill, in his world building, but do not just copy his ideas.
Well,
there you go.
And don't try to make a CW version.
Oh, gosh. Stop Smallvilleing stuff, people. Please.
Yeah, we all went through that.
So I'm going to try and torture John with Legend of the Seeker.
Dang it.
Possibly the BBC Merlin because that is also Smallville.
What I will do is I will put it on the list, but I cannot promise you that that will be. We're going to have a marathon.
Yeah. No.
Of young adult. Like, oh. I'm trying my best to have every month.
I can make a list. We can do Merlin, Robin Hood.
What's funny to me is that you still gave all of these a shot.
Because I love Merlin. I love Merlin so much. Like, I hate Arthur with
you
a deathly passion, but I love Merlin. 12-year-old
Merlin?
No, I liked Sam Neill as Merlin. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're talking about that old.
No,
crap.
But there was some new dumb one that they did, and I'm like, so I don't even understand why I watched this.
Dang it. What I was going to say is that every month I'm going to try to have one of different types of things. So, for example, we have a show or a segment. I don't know what you call it when it's the episode. Anyway, breaking genre is one thing. We have Siren Song, where we talk about songs inspired by strong women, or maybe written by, performed by strong women. And we try to talk about the aesthetic around the songs and
poetry
stories and stuff involved. We just did one that was
fairy tale retellings. It was Halsey and Billie Eilish.
Yes. But I want to get into some like thriller stuff. We try to keep this so that there's a variety of things.
We also try to keep it shorter. We're sorry. This is a long episode.
Yes. We're long in the tooth now, so we're going to say goodbye. But if you want to reach us, Unboxing Story on Twitter and Facebook.
UnboxingStoryPodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, she's on it. And leave us a message on anchor.fm/unboxing-story.
Yes.
If you want to leave us a message.
And
okay,
bye-bye.
Okay, bye. Okay.